On this week's Devils in the Details, United have reportedly been exploring a move for Joshua Zirkzee. What are our preliminary thoughts on this deal, and how would Zirkzee add to United's attack? Midfield is also clearly a problem position for United. With the lack of transfer links surfacing for the position, where should United be focusing their efforts? All right, Case, we're going to get straight into it this time, and we're covering a player who plays for the Dutch national team, so I'm guessing both you and Erik ten Hag are very excited for this episode. But before we get into it, how are you?
I'm good. I'm doing well, Aaron. How are you?
I'm pretty good. For those of you who are wondering about our upload schedule, we're hoping to get back to consistent Mondays. I know we've said that many times, so this time I'm going to try and let the uploads do the talking instead of me, but just so you know, we should be back to Monday uploads, and keep an eye on them. It's just the two of us producing things right now, but we're hoping that we'll be able to get back to a more consistent schedule.
Yeah. All right. And I would just add, there's also just big changes in both of our lives and in the podcast's life that are going to mean we are more capable of, hopefully, being regular and more obligated to be regular. So, we apologize for the interruption in service, and we will be back online shortly.
Error 404.
Yes.
Case and error not found. All right. Mark asks, need that case review of Zirkzee. Awesome potential signing or the next Dutch United player to break my heart?
Yeah. So I've been following him for a long time. I've been following him through, he was briefly with, not briefly, but as a child, an actual child, he was with Feyenoord's youth sides, and he moved to Bayern. I followed him closely with Bayern's youth sides because I found him to be a really interesting prospect. This is going back like 6-7 years. Then I think he went on a loan somewhere in Italy initially, and it didn't go well. I want to say it was either Palermo or Parma, but he didn't really play there. And then ultimately he winds up at Anderlecht in Belgium. He plays very well there. And he's part of a very successful campaign for them, scores some big dramatic goals, and then gets his move to Bologna. And at Bologna, I think it took a while for him to get going, but now, you know, he obviously had this super high-profile campaign. He's gotten a lot of attention as a potential target for English sides, top English sides specifically. So here we are talking about him. It's funny, actually, he's come up in these past few weeks. Another guy who was sort of in a similar vein is Ferdi Kadioglu, who now plays for the Turkish national team as a fullback. But I first started watching him many, many, many years ago when he was still in Dutch football as a winger. So kind of funny to see both of these two become relevant for me personally, on a personal note. Zirkzee. Yeah, so Aaron and I have spoken a lot about him over the last month. Probably one of the players we've debated the most probably ever, right? Like we've gone back and forth on him, both of us, multiple times.
Yeah, I think it comes down to him being a little bit unconventional as a number nine. I think he is, I would classify him as a natural number nine, but the nature of his game is very different to someone like Rasmus Højlund. And so I think there are two central sides of this debate. Number one being, how good is Zirkzee actually, and how does he make United better? And then number two, from a more theoretical standpoint, United are looking for another striker option. Should they be looking for someone who is perhaps more archetypal, similar to Højlund, the type of striker who is constantly going to be on the last line of the opposition defense, looking for ways to break teams down, a striker who will come off the bench and replicate or slightly stylistically differentiate upon what Højlund does with the intent of similar impacts? Or should United be looking to go in a different direction with a player like Zirkzee? And I think over the next 20 to 30 minutes, we'll probably elaborate upon exactly what we mean here by talking about Zirkzee's game a little bit more. Case, let's start with Zirkzee as a player. Maybe a quick overview. what does he do? What doesn't he do? What is he best at? What is not really part of his game?
Yeah, so I would say the thing about him that stood out for as long as I've been following him is that he is, A, very big. He's, I want to say he's 6'4", 6'5". So he sort of checks off that physical requirement quickly. But more importantly, he's really big and he's very technical for his size. Like very, very technical. And I mean that in a variety of ways. He's a very strong dribbler for somebody that big. He is a very strong passer for somebody that big. He's like technical on both feet. And so this made him, this has been true of him since he was 17, 18. And this made him, to me, a really intriguing prospect. And the question was always whether the goal scoring that he was able to do at youth level was going to translate later on. And I would say we can say pretty confidently now that it has not. He's really become sort of a second striker as a result because he has sort of this ball carrying ability, this touch on his passing that you very rarely see from strikers, in general. Forget strikers of his size. And yeah, so what you've really got is a guy who I would say is a center forward, but who is probably best used right now in a front two. Despite his size, I wouldn't say he's a huge aerial threat, though this isn't an instance where I don't think he could be a huge aerial threat. He just isn't used in that way right now. That said, I do think he's a capable pressure outlet. Playing long to him, I think he's very capable of that. It's a strange one because this is not typically the profile of center forward that I'm attracted to. However, because of the physical attributes that he has and the technical attributes, he does sort of fall into that group of players that Aaron and I have spoken about in the past few months as being capable of reaching a really, really high level if they, you know, have some sort of jump. The only thing is, he's not that young. I want to say he's 23 or 24, which, yeah, he's recently turned 23. That's not that young. In the scheme of the footballers who typically make a really big jump, 23 is typically when you're making that really big jump or you've just recently made it. So I think there's a lot of risk here that you wind up with a guy who you spend pretty big money on and he doesn't score goals because his box movement, his finishing ability, none of that I would say is particularly standout. He doesn't take a lot of shots inside the 6-yard box. This is not a break your nose on the front post kind of finisher. I would say he gets most of his shot volume from the edges of the box, often through traffic. His bigger chances typically come in transition off the dribble. And so that's all concerning. But again, I'd much rather bet on a player of this profile than I would on somebody who maybe has better numbers but doesn't have these physicals, which is a departure from how I felt, you know, probably 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe we start with... Okay. From what I've seen of him, I think the hold-up and link-up stuff is pretty immediate. Like, from the second you start watching him, it is pretty obvious that this is a player who, for a striker, not only does he have physical advantages against opposition center backs, he also has technical advantages that allow him to basically either receive with his back to a defender or peel off the defender, receive the ball, and he can turn and carry the ball, he can pass the ball, he can lay it off for someone else, he can flick the ball into, second and third runners. As far as hold up and link up goes, I think he's relatively close to the complete package. I think the main thing that I could see that was missing is I don't think he's particularly dominant aerially. I think he can take balls down from long range, but I don't think he is particularly good at heading the ball. As for the number 9 movement, I think there's a little bit of variability here, which results from the fact that, you know, United fans will recently recall players like, you know, Martial, Ronaldo, who played up front and they retreated off the last line, left the opposition center backs free, and became involved in possession. And I think to some extent, Zirkzee does that as well. I think the key distinction to make in terms of how it relates to this Bologna side and Thiago Motta is I think the movements feel a lot more coordinated than they did when Martial and Ronaldo were playing for United. So what would often happen when Martial and Ronaldo were playing for United, there were two wingers who were out wide. Bruno was behind the striker. A player like Martial would drop deep, receive the ball from a line-breaking pass or a pass from the fullback, and then lay it off to a player like Bruno. And then there would be nobody ahead of Bruno for him to play into. He would have to spray the ball out wide. In certain situations where United were closer to the box, there would be nobody occupying the center backs. So they really had nothing to worry about from a defensive perspective. And I think that was the type of thing that made United a lot less threatening in attack as a whole, because it didn't really matter how good the players were. Martial was a very good player at the time. Bruno was a very good player at the time. Rashford was another very threatening player in this attack. Paul Pogba was around. There was nobody in the box who was consistently occupying the areas where high quality shots actually occur. Whereas I think with Bologna, what tends to happen is when Zirkzee drops deep, there are these coordinated movements from the wingers that actually come in centrally and then give options beyond him so that there is some central occupation of the opposition defenders. I don't know whether that strategy maps to like a Champions League side competing for the top honors in a particular league. I think Bologna's attacking numbers, at least from an underlying perspective, I didn't watch enough of Bologna to get a very good idea of how good they were as an attacking team, but I think they were good enough to finish in the Champions League places in Serie A, but a lot of their performance was based on defensive quality. They were roughly like the eighth best attack in Serie A on attacking metrics. And so I don't necessarily think that we have conclusive evidence that A, this is something that will work in a bigger team with these coordinated movements, even if you get players like Rashford and Garnacho to come in centrally, run beyond him, and occupy central spaces when Zirkzee drops deep. And B, I don't think we have perfect evidence that this is something that he is always going to do in any side. I think there's a chance you can probably coach a side where he is less involved in the buildup, where he comes deep less to receive the ball. And then the part that I didn't really get a good idea of from what I watched of him was how good his movement then becomes in the final third and against a low block. I think what you're saying implies that it's not particularly special and he will probably struggle to create high value shots inside the opposition box. And I think that's probably a key distinction between, you know, a good striker and one of the better, you know, number nines in Europe. And in United's case, one of the best backup number nines in the Premier League, would be his ability to score when he is in the final third and then also offer a lot of, creative stuff when he drops off.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It's funny because I'm going to say this, but I want it to be clear that I'm not actually advocating for this as like the thing that they should do. I actually think he pairs really well with Højlund if you were to use them as a front two. Like if you were to decide that you wanted to use a front two, I think the two of them would complement each other excellently. Unfortunately, I don't think that's the intention here. And yeah, I'm really worried about the goal scoring output when you're leaning on him as your second number nine and you're expecting him to score goals. I think, you know, let's say he gets 20 Premier League 90s next year. I think he scores 5 to 7 goals in those 90s. And that's okay, but like it's not. Like, and I think 7 is even maybe a little generous. Like, I think his primary people would like him because he's really technical, and so he'll be involved in a lot of nice link up. He might release Garnacho and Rashford on counterattacks a lot, but I think we'll also find ourselves being pretty toothless in the final third in settled possession.
When Hoyland's not playing.
Yeah.
I think there's a small chance you could see Hoyland playing at right wing with Zirkzee up front. I think it's an extremely small chance.
I would definitely
you
not
could see
do
Bruno
that
being
personally.
Dropped.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think the odds of a two striker system with Bruno dropped are very low. I think the odds of, you know, you might see that diamond that United rolled out a few times last season. I don't think that's particularly prototypical. I also think, in my opinion, at this point, Garnacho is a starter.
I agree. No,
that might change depending on developments in the starting in the window.
I think Garnacho is like one of the first, like, when you're designing like an 11 for next season. I think he's one of the first players I've got written down to start every week. Like I think he's the first forward I write down. Maybe Hoyland, because there's no one else to play his position. But
yeah, so I don't really know where this leaves us, and I've been kind of stuck on this for a couple weeks
now.
Yeah,
we both have. Yeah.
I mean, I think as a player, my initial thought is he is good enough to be worth the £34 million release clause in isolation. The fact that he is young and has physicals means that I think the odds of him being a completely unusable player in the Premier League for United are nearly zero. Yeah. Like, I think the floor of this signing is quite high. And I also think the ceiling could rise if he has some unprecedented level of, like, either improvement in the air or, you know, greater presence in the box, which is never impossible when you're very big, but it's certainly quite unlikely, I think, given that he's 23.
Yeah, I would describe it like this, and hopefully people can picture this. If you look at the curve of his outcomes, you have the far left tail, so his floor, and then you have the median outcome, which is very close to his floor, and then you've got a really high ceiling. It's just the really high ceiling is like much further from, you know, the median outcome than the high floor, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. I think it's probably a little bit statistical, but
yeah,
it does.
It's how I think
sense.
About it, though. So it's just how it's very. It's a very statistical way of thinking about it. But hopefully, for some of you, that adds something instead of detracting.
Yeah. So I think it's very possible that £34 million for Zirkzee is the one of the best value for money moves for a striker for a team, in Europe's top five leagues. I don't know if he fixes the issues that United have in this position or in general. I think he might just be like another dimension of something United don't currently have. And he would certainly add something, but I think at times we might struggle to quantify it. And I also think in scenarios where Hoyland is out, or at this time next year, you might find United looking for another striker if they go and buy Zirkzee. Whereas if they go and buy a conventional number 9, I don't think in a year's time they will be looking at buying this sort of player. Not to say that this sort of player isn't valuable, but I think ultimately where United's attack needs to get better right now is penetrating low blocks. And I think the fact that last season was so poor kind of makes people lose sight of that, because United weren't playing up against low blocks that often. Compared to the, you know, 5-6 seasons before that. And so I really just don't know. I mean, I think the fact that he's a good player and good value for money means that it's probably not going to be a disaster. But I don't know if this is particularly what United need.
That said, I also think what United need more than anything else are young players with great physicals and technical ability who are just going to contribute and have the chance to turn into like legitimate stars. And I do think he is all of those things. So, yeah, I think this is sort of an instance where I don't think my projection for how United perform next season changes that much with him in the side. But I feel a lot better about you. I feel better about United's squad with him in the side, like long term. Just because I like the player for a lot of reasons. This isn't a guy who go ahead.
No. I'll finish what you're saying.
I don't think, I think he has multiple paths to be like, to being a real contributor for this team. I don't know. It's a strange one. There's no doubt about it. But the price tag isn't that high, is the other thing.
There's one more thing that I thought of that I'll add, which is that I think with Bruno in the side, you run this constant worry about having a reliable receiver in the final third. I think this is something that people talked about a lot when Martial was playing ahead of Bruno. In defense of him, I personally wasn't a fan of Martial at number 9, but I do think that there were matches where having him there gave United a player with which to play centrally to a receiver in attacking areas and then be able to rely on that player to turn on the ball and get them facing forward. And I think in the context of a team that I hope will try to play out of the back and a team that I hope will try to play centrally into areas in the final third, turn on the ball and either consolidate possession or try and create shots in the final third, I do think Zirkzee could be a very interesting enabler and the type of player who it might not be noticeable in his goal impact, but would definitely make United more able to get into the final third and create chances than they currently are.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And the other thing I would add is I don't think he's quite the dribbler Martial was at his peak. But I think he is a...
He's not as way fast. Better. I think that's the key.
Yeah, he's not as fast. I think he is a way better passer. Like a way, way, way better passer. He is bizarrely strong as a passer for the position he plays and the size he is. Something I often thought about him in youth football was that if he weren't so big, he would be playing in central midfield. And that he kind of got, you know, put in that role as a kid because he was huge. And, you know, you're a big kid, you go play striker, you go play center back.
Yeah, I think with Martial, he had a case of a dominant dribbling left winger being converted into a hold-up striker. Whereas with Zirkzee, you have a striker who is just disproportionately good at certain traits that are less common and not as good at traits that are more common. I guess we get to the final question here. Case, would you sign Zirkzee? And if not, who would you sign?
I would sign him and I would sign another striker if I, in an ideal world.
I think I said this to you last week that like, and I was half joking, but Ben Yedder walked away from Monaco and he has like 15 non-penalty league goals every season. Yeah. And United could just get him for free for a year and get Zirkzee and then just keep doing that with old strikers so you have both types of presences off the bench. And I mean, I was half joking, and I don't know if Ben Yedder is specifically the name that I would choose, but...
I mean, I love Ben Yedder. I think he's a very good player, but yeah. If I can't make that caveat, I would just say yes. Yes, I would buy him because I think the alternative in that price range is not someone as young or as talented.
Yeah, I mean, the main options United are looking at right now are reportedly Zirkzee, Ivan Toney, and Jonathan David. Ivan Toney, for me, is out of the age range. And, I mean, he's great to watch, but he also doesn't really score that many goals, in my opinion. So, I don't really think that he overtly solves the issues. I think you're getting someone 5 years older, more expensive, and not a terrible amount better. As for David, I do think David scores more than Zirkzee. I think it's pretty undeniable at this point that he will score goals, but I don't think there's much upside as a player. Like I would be quite happy if he joined United, but I think he'd pretty much be a bona fide backup to Hoyland, whereas I think Zirkzee probably gives you a different option, but maybe closer to Hoyland in terms of like the dimension of quality. And so it really comes down to what United want. I think between those three options, I'm inclined to say Zirkzee, but there are some other interesting options on the market in terms of like slightly older number nines who are running down their contracts. And I have to watch through some of those before I come to a final decision. The biggest name being Serhou Guirassy, who has something like 20-something goals in the Bundesliga this season and is supposed to be available for 15 million. He's in his late 20s. I think Morata is also available for like 10 million euros.
Yeah, see, also my thing is I just don't want players that... I have no interest in players that age. It's in particular this summer because I just... I mean, I've said this a million times. I don't have faith the manager is going to, like, turn this around and himself be here the next time we win a title. And so I don't really want to see short-term moves. I think it's just going to, you know, artificially inflate maybe a team that plays like an eighth-place side into a sixth-place side, which I don't think that does anything for anyone.
Yeah, I think I agree in terms of Morata in his 30s. I think with Guirassy, it's a little bit less clear. He's in his late 20s, and he's like 15 mil, and he has over 20 goals in the Bundesliga this last season. And so I think there's enough to justify that he could be playing for United for 4 or 5 seasons. And at 15 million, I think that's probably not so bad, but... I generally agree
How many times have we bet on a 29-year-old to be playing for United for 4 or 5 seasons and they play for United for 2 seasons? And one of them is absolutely horrid. Yeah, that's true. I
hear you.
Yeah, it feels like repeating the same patterns. That said, to an extent, with Zirkzee, it's also repeating the same patterns because this is a guy who doesn't have like that key... He's not a volume goal scorer and... You're kind of betting on him to do that, to do something he hasn't shown himself to be able to do, and that seems unwise. So neither of these are perfect options. I will admit.
I think that does it. I'm more convinced into signing Zirkzee than I was at the start of this. But I think there's a world in which United get attacking players who are very talented but don't necessarily solve the problems. And the team is still a lot better for it next season. In particular, I think Zirkzee is one name. Another name I've seen linked is Desiree Doué, who is a player I would love for United to have, even though I don't particularly think he fits into any of the positions that United currently play. I think if you get to a point where you just consistently have good attacking players on the pitch, you can later on sign other guys to balance it out. And I don't think these players are not needed. Like, I think there's a clear depth issue in United's attack. And so, yeah, I could be convinced that this could end up being a pretty good signing. My main fear is that United will end up needing another striker in a year's time, as well as Zirkzee and Hoyland.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think it's possible, but I also think the risk of that has more to do with Hoyland not taking the steps forward that you need him to than... It does with Zirkzee. But
I guess I just kind of think the team should have two very, very good goal-scoring number nines in the squad at all times.
Yeah, I agree that that's the ideal. But I don't think you're going to... I don't think next season we're going to come out of the season thinking, you know what, we need center forwards as like even a top 2 or 3 priority if you make this move.
I think on that note, we can move to our second topic of the day. Calvin Wisen asks, who is your ideal center defensive midfield target this window? Is moving Bruno out of the midfield best for our overall midfield balance? And Will asks, we've seen a lot of stories about Zirkzee and different center backs, but not much about defensive midfielders. Who are some players you'd like us to go for in that position? First of all, I don't really think either of us are pro moving Bruno out of midfield. Would you agree with that?
Where do you move him to?
It says false nine or right wing.
Yeah, I would not do that.
Yeah, I think it basically just comes down to I think we both want a lot of physicality in the front three, and Bruno plays his best football behind the striker, and he's currently United's best player, so might as well keep him there. All right, with that, defensive midfielders. Case, targets for defensive midfield?
Yeah, targets for defensive midfield. I mean, the key one is Amadou Onana, who I think I'm in. I think I want it.
I was in. I mean, I think when we recorded, we were measured about it.
Yeah, and I still feel
I am a little bit more sold on his press resistance than I was back then. But I think the measured opinion was not that we didn't want him to sign. It was that I don't think he's going to be one of the most impactful midfielders in the world. I still don't really think that. But I do think he is very, very good and will enable the types of players who could be the best midfielder in the world. And I also think he adds so much of specifically the things United currently lack in midfield, the physicality, the distance coverage, the defensive nous, the press resistance, perhaps even some box threat, which I think he's still developing into, but that's something we saw McTominay play a lot of minutes for last season. I think he could probably add some of that with the size and an aerial ability he brings in the opposition box. Yeah, he's just really good, and he's young. And even though I think our assessment a couple of months ago was, I don't think he'll be one of the best midfielders in the world, I still think he is a midfielder who United should definitely look to sign.
Yeah. Agreed on that. I don't think he's going to be one of the best in the world, but I think he's the best available, and I think the physicals are just something you cannot turn down. It's the physicals with a certain level of technicality. I think it makes you way harder to beat. I think he makes you harder to beat. I don't know if he means you can beat anyone. Those are sort of two different things, but yeah, I just think you're not going to get overrun in specific contexts with him in midfield, and I like the idea of that.
All right, any other names stand out to you?
Who else have we been linked with? I feel like we haven't really seen defensive midfield links, to be honest.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the point of the questions. Yeah. I think Youssef Fofana is a big one. I haven't had the chance to watch much of him, but he's available for £25 million, so that will be one on my watch list for the upcoming weeks. Morten Hjelmeland of Sporting.
Yeah, I don't want Hjelmeland. I've watched him play a reasonable amount, and you've seen him play more, I think, but kind of a strange
player.
Yeah,
I think he makes United better, but I think that's not the bar. He's kind of, like you said, he's kind of a strange player. I don't think his impact shows up in any kind of data flagging, at least with public event data, because he's not a particularly progressive passer. He's not a particularly progressive carrier. He's not a particularly standout athlete. I think he's a good athlete, but he is good at a lot of things. Like he is a good athlete. He is a good defensive positioning player. He can play a couple of different roles within the midfield. He is quite press resistant, I would say. His ball striking is generally clean, even though he doesn't really use it to pass between the lines a lot. Overall, I think he's the type of player who would make United better. I don't think he's the type of player who ends up being like a key starter for a title winner. I think that's what United should be looking for at this point. I think his release clause is absurd, as usually is the case with players playing in the starting 11 of Sporting, Benfica, and Porto. And so when you buy from those teams, you have to make sure what you're buying is excellent. Otherwise, you're not going to end up getting the value you end up spending. I kind of alluded to that in the last episode when I said I don't think United should sign Antonio Silva. I think, again, nothing wrong with Antonio Silva as a player. I just don't think he justifies the value that it's going to take to get him out of Benfica. Nor do I think that he's at the level that elevates United to a different sort of team for the $65 million plus that they're going to have to pay. There is one player in these sides that I do think elevates United even for a massive fee, and that is João Neves. There are some links. The problem here is that his release clause is like 120 million euros. That's the main problem. I don't think United are going to be able to pay that. The second problem is I don't think that he currently fits into a midfield three with any of Mainoo, Mount, or Bruno. Like maybe you could run a midfield three of Neves, Mainoo, and Mount, but I still think you're risking it with the physicality. Neves is an amazing player though. Like 2004 born, very press resistant, extremely strong dribbler. I think his passing range can get better. He has good fundamentals, but sometimes he over or under hits, particularly in the longer range. But he can basically get out of most pressure situations, wins a ton of fouls. And then defensively, he's super mobile. He wins a lot of aerial duels in Portugal relative to his size. I think there are questions about kind of the scalability of his defensive game to the Premier League just because he's small. But I do ultimately think he is quite fast and a really strong tackler and a relatively strong jumper. So I think he gets good results defensively in the Premier League. A lot of people are comparing him to N'Golo Kanté. I think Kanté is basically the best at this sort of physical mold to defensive ability of all time. So I have some reluctance to say that he's going to be the next Kanté, but I do see the comparisons. Like I think his level of defensive dominance in Portugal is probably not eons away from the level of physical dominance Kanté had in the Premier League. So when you combine that skill set, I do think you have a player who could be worth 85 million or whatever it's going to take to get him out of Benfica. I just don't know if that is exactly what United need to be doing this summer, which means it's kind of like, okay, I think he's a great player. I think he's good enough for United. Therefore, United should sign him. And I think eventually he does get into the starting 11 with Mainoo once you move on Bruno. But I don't think that right now he's what United are necessarily looking for.
Don't you think he probably starts over Mainoo if you buy him?
He does. Yeah. Right now he does. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you could get Amadou Onana and João Neves, done. Yeah. Like
I think
Neves, Bruno, that's fantastic. That's a great midfield.
Yeah. Like, I think for me, he is the player who would have the largest impact, realistically, you could buy for United, actually.
Have you had the chance to dig through the tape ever since I...
Yeah, I did watch a few Benfica matches 2 weeks ago. It just blew my mind. Reminded me a lot of Verratti in possession, but it's just way more robust out of possession.
I think the ceiling is that like Thiago Verratti kind of player, but I right now I don't think his passing is quite at that level. Yeah. So I think that's the main thing that I have doubts about.
Yeah, that's why I didn't say Thiago
getting that good.
Yeah, because I think Thiago had a sort of different level of like touch between the lines compared to Verratti, which I don't think Neves has. But yeah, I do like the player. I do like the player. That said, I will say one thing. The right time to start buying elite star level talent is always today. So while I take your point that like, is it like we're not in that market this summer for whatever reason, that's a problem indefinitely. Like, you're not beating Arsenal or City until you have these guys. And you can try to develop
them. I'm kind of arguing.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm kind of arguing both sides by saying it anyways. I think United should sign João Neves if they have the money.
Yeah. I guess that's that on that.
I also just think the absence of other names gives you even more of a reason to go get him. I agree. I don't think there are other central midfielders kicking about who are born in 2004 and doing this. So, I mean, every other name, like I'm looking at our list now, there are no other names who are born in the 2000s and play in Europe's top five leagues or the Champions League. There are some that have appeared in the Champions League group stages, And I wouldn't say they're like standout options or names that have been linked. Yeah, I mean, I watched a bit of Kefren Turam. Seems like a good player, but United are going to be blocked from signing him if they're blocked from signing Tadebo. And I also think he's just not a deep lying midfielder by my watch. I watched Florentino Luis when I was watching Neves. I don't think United should look to sign him. I guess Mats Wiefer is another name that's been in the market. You got anything about Wiefer?
Yeah, so I think he's a good player. I think he'd be useful at United. Meets the physical level you want. Technically, he's fine. That's about it. Like, I wouldn't say he's amazing. He's press resistant enough, but I think he's more of a squad level player than he is like an impact starter. Maybe he's a starter, but a lower end starter. And I don't think those are the players you target right now.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I guess that leaves us with Onana and Neves, and then I'm going to go watch some of Fofana and come back to you guys on him. But I think, I mean, just hypothetically, if United end up getting, say, Branthwaite, Onana, Zirkzee, and like Desiree Doué, I think that'd be a pretty good window. So
that'd be awesome. I don't know if that's happening, but that would be awesome.
That it probably will not happen. I'm surprised I'm not seeing Onana links. They were pretty hot throughout the season, and then they kind of dried up in the last month or so.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what that means. I'm seeing a lot of Arsenal fans also proclaiming interest in Onana. I think that one confuses me a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. It's a strange one. I don't really see how he fits into their team, but I said that last year about Havertz, and Havertz had a strong impact, positive impact for Arsenal this season. So,
all right, I think with that, that's all we have today in terms of the football. No details. This is a segment where we allow you to ask anything you like, but with one caveat. The questions cannot be about football. Case has a no details question for today. Case, what is your no details question?
I do. My no details question is, Aaron, what have you been listening to recently?
Well, this year I have been a programmer and then a full-time student, so I've been listening to a ton of music. What do you want? Like recent releases, all time stuff. I listen to a lot of retro stuff. Just anything. You got to narrow it down for me a little bit.
Okay. How to narrow it down? What artist, new artist have you listened to in the greatest volume recently?
New to you, artist. New to
you. Doesn't have to be new in general.
New to me. Okay. Well, I think I implied this when we had Brent on the podcast. My favorite album of the year so far has been Only God Was Above Us by Vampire Weekend. For those of you who don't know Vampire Weekend, they're kind of like a, I'm guessing based on the demographic of our podcast, a lot of you know Vampire Weekend, but they're a bit of like a kind of rock band. I think they sometimes have reggae infused influences, and then they also throw a lot of classical piano into the mix. I played classical piano for, I think I also said this when we had Brent on, I played classical piano for like 12 years growing up. And so for me, this is like the perfect mix of musical influences. I like the album enough to buy tickets to their concert in September. And then I've recently completed their discography. Most recently I listened to Father of the Bride, which was their album before Only God Was Above Us. I really enjoyed it. It was nominated for Grammy Album of the Year. I think it lost to Billie Eilish. It also had features from Danielle Haim. Haim are one of my favorite pop groups currently. I saw them in concert 2 years ago. If you like pop music and you haven't listened to Women in Music 3 by Haim, it's another great album. And then it also had Steve Lacy, Bad Habit was one of my favorite songs of the last few years. So if you haven't listened to Bad Habit,
I'm sure almost everyone listens to this podcast.
I'm sure almost everyone's heard Bad Habit. The full album's pretty good too, Gemini writes.
Yeah.
So Vampire Weekend, Haim, Steve Lacy, all in one for you there. And then I'll give you an older group as well. But these are most of the older groups I listen to are just by default very popular. Actually, no, I won't. No, I won't. I'm going to give you a Canadian group or a Canadian artist. Recently, I think you might like this too, Case. I came across an artist named Zaina. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. She is a Canadian R&B singer from Montreal. I don't know if she's actually currently from Montreal, but.
What do you mean by currently?
I don't know if she's currently living in Montreal. Oh, okay. Or if she spent her entire childhood in Montreal, but she's also Lebanese Egyptian.
Oh.
So her music is like R&B music with a lot of Lebanese Egyptian influence. Kind of like a half North American, half I'd say Lebanese Egyptian sort of music, which I feel like someone with more technical music vocabulary could probably explain this better, but I think it's really cool.
She's got a song with an artist who's actually kind of like a friend of a friend.
I know who you're referring to, yeah. But I think she's the traction that she has gained in Canada has been because she remade a song by a Canadian artist named Sean Desmond from about 20 years ago. I don't know how famous Sean Desmond is outside Canada.
I've got no idea who that is.
Okay, yeah. He's a pretty big deal in Canada.
Okay.
I would say he's or was 10 years ago, I think, at his peak. But it was a song from like 22 years ago that she's remade and he endorsed it, and then I think that's been like the most popularity she's gotten out of it. But anyway, her new album's called East End Confessions, and I think it's pretty cool. And also something that most of our listeners would probably not have heard. So that's what I'll go with. As much as I could recommend a ton of artists from like the 60s and 70s that you've all heard of. I'm going this weekend for the Jazz Festival. Montreal is, I think, the biggest jazz festival in the world. It's a pretty amazing street party. And a friend of the pod, Alex Collings, has been sending me like, apparently the lineup has a bunch of his favorites. So he's been sending me all the recommendations. I think in particular, I'm going to try and see Freddie Gibbs. If you've heard of Freddie Gibbs. Yeah, on Sunday. So, and he's doing a free concert in the city. So hopefully I get to see that. I listened to his recent album. I'm still trying to figure out like what I make of it. It's definitely very creative and unique, but I think it's one of those things that needs like two or three listens to really get into it. But yeah, Montreal Jazz Festival is super fun if you ever get the chance to go.
Okay. Good rec. Yeah, yeah.
Last year, actually, you'll find this really interesting. Last year, I saw DJ Premier do a set at the Jazz Festival.
I think you told me yeah. That when it happened.
I might have even mentioned it on this podcast before, but that was really cool. I know he worked with, like, again, I'm pretty sure a lot of people on the podcast will know DJ Premier. I now remember I have definitely talked about this before, so you can cut it up.
I won't cut it. It's still interesting. fun fact, Vampire Weekend was actually the first concert I ever went to.
Really? Yeah, when was that?
Like more than a decade ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn. Was it good?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Yeah, it was cool. But that was obviously many, many, many. That was like what at the beginning, like the first peak in their popularity, if that makes sense. Because I think Ezra Koenig wound up going and doing solo stuff for a while. And then they came back and started making albums again.
Yeah, they were definitely much bigger like 10 years ago than they are now.
Yeah.
Maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah.
All right, how about you?
Yeah, what have I been listening to? Let me look. I have been, I think I said this on the last podcast, but I recently went back to old Kendrick stuff and because as a consequence of the beef and have been really enjoying that.
That concert.
Insane. Oh, insane. Insane. The fact that he played Not Like Us like four or five times is ridiculous. I spent like I didn't watch it live because I was out, but I spent like, I want to say 2 or 3 hours watching the clips. like because they were so ridiculous. What have I been listening to? I've mentioned Rels Bey on this podcast before. He has a relatively new album that I've been enjoying. I went to see Fade, a reggaeton artist.
Interesting.
In concert. That was cool. But I haven't really, I can't say I've doubled down on listening to him since, but he is somebody I've listened to pretty regularly. I don't really have, dude, I'm looking at my like recent music on Spotify and it's some weird stuff. Like in that it's very eclectic. Like it's not, there's not a focus. I have,
that's basically always what I listen to. Like I'll always have like 8 different genres in my last 10.
Yeah, I don't think I have a good rec right now, which is sad because that's pretty rare for me. I usually am perfectly happy to evangelize people to my music tastes. Yeah, I got nothing. There's one of my favorite artists, Peter Cat Recording Company, who I've spoken about on this podcast multiple times. And they recently put out a new single called People Never Change that I really enjoyed. So I've been listening to that. Yeah, I think that's all I got, man. This is rare for me. This is pretty, yeah, this is pretty out of character. I got nothing.
All right, well, next time you ask this, you're gonna have to have stuff prepared. But I'm also seeing Earth, Wind, and Fire in concert next month. Oh, cool. With Chicago, which I'm really excited for. And then a couple weeks ago, I saw Kingfish. I was telling you about this. He's like Kingfish is this 25-year-old blues rock guitarist. And I wouldn't even recommend listening to him on Spotify. I would recommend going on YouTube and watching him play a guitar. Between him and like the Eagles in March, this is the best guitar I've ever seen with my own two eyes. Yeah. Like
Eagles are awesome.
I've never been so lucky. Yeah, I think their albums are good. Seeing them live was absolutely spectacular. Like the harmony that their voices create, and then the fact that they all play guitars, and then they all add different like bits to each song. Watching the two guys play the like singing guitar solo on Hotel California. The only thing that I was upset about with the concert was that Steely Dan was supposed to open for them, and like Asia by Steely Dan is one of my favorite albums ever, but something happened. I'm not entirely sure what, and Steely Dan didn't get to play.
Steely Dan as an opener is pretty crazy. Like,
yeah. Like they were, I was about as excited to see Steely Dan as I was to see the Eagles in the first place, because I actually think in terms of like records, I like Steely Dan's records more than Eagles. I think a lot of Steely Dan, like a lot of their history is based on revolutionary things they did in the recording studio. So I was probably more excited to see Eagles live, but like, I was upset that whatever happened, I guess hope everything's okay as well, but they weren't able to play. They had Tom Cochran instead, and Tom Cochran did a great job. I don't know if you're familiar, but he's like a really big Canadian rock artist. The original singer of Life is a Highway.
Huh. Yeah, I knew the name. I couldn't have placed him. There's a great documentary on the Eagles. I don't know what streaming platform it's on, but it's out there. And it is incredibly detailed and very cool. I would recommend it.
My dad has like a live concert video of theirs from like the 90s. And I think it's his favorite concert DVD.
That's cool.
And every time someone mentions the Eagles, he's like, we have to watch that concert video. And so like when he has wanted to see the Eagles probably for like 10 years, but every time they come to Toronto, the tickets are like deep into the triple digits. And so this time I got the pre-sale and I was like, do you want them or not? This is the most affordable it's ever going to be. And he was like, just buy them. So yeah, great concert.
That's awesome.
Once in a lifetime kind of concert. So,
that's cool.
All right. I think with that, we can call an end to our Monday return. K Case, thank you for joining me. Everybody, thank you for listening. We're hoping to be back with regular Mondays. And bear with us as we hopefully introduce a new era of the podcast, as well as a little bit of a new era of our own lives on a personal note. Thanks, everyone.
Adios.
Hope you enjoyed this week's Devils in the Details. You can follow us at Devils ITD Pod on Twitter or on a variety of streaming platforms. Our awesome theme music was made by Jacob Connor. You can find at Jacob J. Connor on Twitter. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.